The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Happy Tuesday. You can find us on Twitter at Bastards_Boston. I am your host, Charlie Smith, coming to you from Providence, Rhode Island. You can find me on Twitter at Smith_MLB. Our other host for today is going to be Terry Cushman, coming to us from Myrtle Beach in South Carolina by way of Windham, Maine. Terry, how are you doing? Where can the fans find you?
I am doing splendid. And I can be found at Cushman MLB. We have an Instagram account. We also have a blog, which is very unique. If you look at it, you'll see what I mean. It's kind of panel style. We all give our takes on there all at once on whatever the topic is. So search for Bastards of Boston Substack, actually. And that's where you'll find that. We weren't too active in the last week because we are addressing our co-host vacancy. So we're going to have a new co-host. Basically, a week from today will be the final interview round. So it's a pretty intense vetting process. It started with about 30 to 35 applicants, and then 17 of them will move on. And nine of them will make the interview rounds. And then the final interview round will have the best three out of those nine. So very rigorous process, but it's been very fruitful. It's how we've built this podcast. And so we'll get back to the blogging sooner than later. But a lot going on.
Yeah. I mean, Terry, to your point, it's been exciting. We want to wish our former co-hosts well and hope that they're all doing well. But, you know, when one door closes, a window opens. So excited for the near future. Let's get into some hot takes. I was really relishing some of these today and, you know, taking a look at some of them. I really cannot tell you how excited I was to just get into this. So without any further ado, our first hot take comes to us from Bruce Adams at Trivia Bruce. And Bruce Adams wrote, "Story will never be good enough to start for this team again." So, Bruce, I'm going to thank you for that hot take. And I don't know if I want to call it a hot take based on what we've seen as of late, because if you had said that maybe 3 weeks ago, I'd say that's a hot take right there. But now we've been able to see for the last 3 weeks some players that are lighting up the Christmas tree in more ways than one. That is going to make it incredibly difficult for somebody like Trevor Story to come back into this lineup. So you have, you know, Willier Abreu in there. You've got Emmanuel Valdez in there. You've got David Hamilton in there. And these are all players that, you know, before this year started, we really weren't sure how they were going to fit into this team or what position they were going to be playing. I'm going to say that now. I think based on what we've seen over the last month, based on health alone, you're right. Story will never be good enough to start for this team again. 1 month ago, I probably would have said, I don't know about that because, you know, we still got to see what happens. And Trevor Story is Trevor Story. We've seen what he can do in the past when he was a member of the Colorado Rockies. Do I think that he's going to be able to turn it around though? Man, oh man. It would be nice, but it would take a lot for me to rebuild the broken trust that has happened. So as it currently stands right now, I do not think that Trevor Story will find himself as a starter at either second base or short for the Boston Red Sox again. You know, Sidon Rafaela is going to be playing quite a bit. You have Emmanuel Valdez also in there, and then even, you know, playing short, if we, for whatever reason, have Sidon at one position, David Hamilton's going to be in there as well. So worst case scenario, or even another option, you have Connor Wong. Connor Wong doesn't get broken. So I don't know if we're going to have Story back in there at the same level of trust. That's my two cents. Terry, anything you want to add to that take?
You know, I appreciate the hot take from Bruce. Just imagine where we would be right now if Trevor Story was in the lineup, striking out, not really contributing. I mean, David Hamilton in 2 months has given you more than what Trevor Story has given you the whole 3 years he's been here. You're getting really robust production out of Hamilton. And, you know, some of the Trevor Story defenders will preach about his defense, but that's not good enough. That's not good enough. And we're probably a few games under 500 right now. Well, I shouldn't say that, but we probably have 4 or 5 fewer wins right now if Trevor Story is in there every day racking up. He probably would have had a 200 to 220 strikeout season and not dynamic with the bat. So I could care less if I ever see Trevor Story again next year. I mean, he probably could be your second baseman behind Meyer, but he's not gonna give you anything really offensively.
Trevor Story in 3 years has 19 home runs, 84 RBIs. He's got a total of 44 walks, 24 stolen bases, is hitting way under 230, 66 runs scored. I mean, this just is not what we expected. 124 hits over 3 seasons. So you're averaging 40 hits a year. And that's assuming the end of the year, you know, is today. This is not even remotely close. And for the production that you've seen from Hamilton so far, if the question is to have Trevor Story go back at short full time, no way. And second, you're going to be fighting a lot of players. And truth be told, he's not even the only one. Vaughn Grissom's going to be fighting for playing time too when he comes back, and he's also kind of on the doo-doo list right now. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of names that are going to find themselves really struggling to find playing time on the Boston Red Sox because the younger guys that are hungrier and just are showing that they want it more. And truth be told, injuries are part of the game, but injuries shouldn't be the main part of your game. And unfortunately for Trevor Story, that's just become a little too much of the truth. So, Bruce, thank you for your hot take. Terry, what do you have for yours?
Mine, I got to get back to my likes, comes from KJ Onyx on Twitter. And he is the opposite of our last hot taker, Bruce. Bruce, not a big fan of Donald Trump. KJ Onyx, other side of the spectrum. So, KJ comes from Las Vegas. I'll actually be there this fall in November for a week. But his hot take, and ironically, even though I line with him politically, I do not agree with his hot take. He says, Devers should be traded if we can deal him. His salary can be used to extend the young core. Devers is not worth the money. So I disagree with that, obviously. Devers is, unfortunately, he's kind of a product of this rebuild. You know, he doesn't have the weapons around him anymore. He doesn't have, you know, Xander Bogaerts hitting on one side of him and JD Martinez hitting on the other. You know, he's had Tyler O'Neill, who's been up and down. Connor Wong has hit in front of him. Willier Abreu has hit in front of him. it just doesn't do him any justice to, you know, to be on a team that's decided not to compete. Having said that, I mean, Devers has had he's been pretty productive over the last few years. Presently this year, he's hitting, let's see, 275 with an on base of 360. He's hit 14 home runs, so not quite. Yeah, actually, he is. He's on pace to probably hit 34, 35. Where are we at with doubles? He's driven in 40, by the way, so that's basically on pace for 100. Doubles this season, only 15. Typically, he'd probably be a little bit higher at this point, but I mean, I think he's been pretty solid overall. Let's see how he's done in WAR the last couple of years. 3.5 WAR in 2023, 4.5 WAR in 2022. What do we hate here?
I mean, I kind of laughed when I saw it. It's okay, Jonix, but you got to start somewhere. And, you know, Terry just hit up on a lot of good points. When you don't have a lot of players around you that also are scary, they're not going to necessarily be giving you the pitches you need or want to see. So you also have that mixed in with a player who sometimes can press from time to time. But trading Devers, on what planet is that going to get you what you want? Like, I would love to know if you listen to this, what is the prospect or return that you get for somebody that's going to be locked in to a deal for the next 12 years? Like, what are you expecting to get for this guy? I'm very, very curious to know what is going through that mind, because he's going to be signed through, you know, 2032 or 2033. He still has a boatload of years left on this deal. So if the goal is to win, trading one of your best and biggest names, probably not going to get it done. I think that the Red Sox, in theory, could be a real contender inside 3 years. I really do. I think there's a chance that the Red Sox could get back to that point in 3 years. You trading Rafi Devers is not going to get it done. If they can address the necessary needs, getting a starting pitcher, minimum two, one elite, getting another power right-handed bat in there, no disrespect to Tyler O'Neill, I don't think that he's going to be staying long-term here in Boston. I think you can be one of those teams in the AL East that can compete for wins. Is it going to be the Baltimore Orioles? No. Is it going to be the New York Yankees? No, because the Yankees are getting older too, and that Giancarlo Stanton contract is not going to be aging well. It's already not. So I appreciate it, but I don't think that this is going to be the direction you want to go in if you're going to try to tell your younger players, while we still want to extend you, that we're, you know, trading him is not going to make the team all of a sudden more competitive. There are a lot of players on this team that you don't need to necessarily extend right away because there's arbitration. Jaren Duran is one of those guys that you do not need to extend. He's going to be arbitration eligible until, and Terry can correct me, 32, 33 years old. You do not need to lock him up for a long-term deal. You can just keep going to arbitration and just do year to year. And by then, one of his biggest assets, which are his wheels, may not be what they were beforehand. He might be a 30 doubles guy, but I doubt he's going to be stealing 30, 40 stolen bases every year. So that's also something else you have to kind of monitor. While you have a player that's getting that kind of crazy contract or big contract, not say crazy because he's earned it. He's done great work. And as Terry mentioned, he's going to be hitting 34, 35 home runs. Probably won't have the 100 RBIs this year, but you think about the level of players that he's had in the past and the level of players he's got now, a little bit different. So I think you got to think about it from a different perspective. They locked up Devers now. In 5-6 years, things are going to be a little bit different, at which point in 3 years, Devers is going to be almost done with his contract. Who knows what he'll do then at that point. Gary, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, just a couple things. I mean, when we finally do get back to the postseason, Devers, in a much smaller sample size, has similar postseason numbers to David Ortiz. So if we were a competitive team, I mean, Devers would probably have some of those signature moments. The other thing I want to point out about Devers is that he doesn't mail it in. When the Red Sox start tanking, you know, and we start sinking towards last place, he's not like JD Martinez, who always seemed to mail it in during those types of seasons. You know, he gives you a full productive season. This past winter, Devers was kind of chirping ownership. He's like, you got to give us some better weapons here. So he wants to win. The big money he signed for, $300+ million, it hasn't changed his attitude. He still shows up and gives you 100%. So I see too much upside in keeping him.
Yeah, we're absolutely aligned on that one. So absolutely perfect. So KJ Onyx, thank you so much. Third on our hit parade here for hot takes. This is coming from Scott Capo Smith at Capo_Scott. So Scott says, starting pitching still needs to be majorly addressed. Hauk is the only stud on the staff. The other guys are mid. So I just learned what that meant, like calling somebody mid, not recently, but I remember asking somebody, what does that even mean? So Scott, thank you for so much for the hot take. That is actually something I was just talking about briefly and also on a prior episode as well. You need to have minimum two starting pitchers that are elite in that rotation. And Hauk is really the only person right now that I can consider to be elite. We want Brian Baio to be elite. We want Nick Pivetta to be elite. We want Cutter Crawford to be elite. But Baio hasn't taken that necessary step forward that we really needed him to take. Nick Pivetta really hasn't gone in the same direction. He's shown moments for sure, but he's not quite where I want him to be. And Cutter is starting to, I'm going to say, kind of hit a plateau. I wouldn't say regress, but I wouldn't say he's gotten better. So you're absolutely right. So with the amount of money that we currently have, the fear that the Red Sox may not be where they want to be, I think we're still minimum 1 year away from getting that elite pitcher. But here's the other thing too that you also need to talk about. While you're right, we do need to talk about a starting pitcher. You think about the two players before the 2024 season that were supposed to be getting like stupid contracts. Jordan Montgomery and Blake Snell both have had disastrous years in 2024. They were coming off incredible seasons, and I said it too. I did not want Blake Snell. I didn't want to touch that contract. I didn't want to touch that player because I thought it was an anomaly. He's only had one incredibly good year before that Cy Young season, and look what he's doing. Jordan Montgomery, to Terry's credit on a prior episode, somebody that said, reap the benefits of being on a World Series contender, World Series team. So the Red Sox do need to be smart about who they go after, and it shouldn't be somebody that had a stupidly good season. It's going to have to be someone that is perhaps flying under the radar, but I don't want to do any more of these repair players that are, you know, little rentals or, you know, project players. I want to get somebody who's good, and I want them, you know, within a year to 2 years. The other guys being mid, I think Baio has the ability to step it up and be above mid. And I think that Pivetta has also that ability to be above mid. Crawford, Cutter, I'm still so confused with Cutter Crawford. Like, I think he has these moments where he can be brilliant, but it's just not consistent enough. So I guess, yeah, I could see why you would think he's mid, but there's still a little left to be desired for both Baio and Pivetta. I haven't given up on Baio. I think he has the ability to be that guy in the near future, but I don't know if he'll ever reach that top tier, like elite one that we're all hoping he can go or and become. Terry, anything you want to add?
Yeah, just super randomly before I address the hot take. Jordan Montgomery quietly has put together a few good starts. Let's see. Against the Angels 3 starts ago, 5 2/3, just 3 earned runs. His next start against the White Sox, take that for what it is, 5 innings, 0 earned runs. But a little bit more impressively against the Phillies in his last start. That was a few days ago. Six innings, two earned, struck out five. So he might finally be on the upswing after that wonky start. But as for the hot take here, let's see, who was it again? Scott Capo-Smith. Let's creep him real quick. Most of our... Oh, he's from Indiana. From the heartland of America. He interacts with us a lot on Twitter, so I do appreciate that. And he has a giant tattoo. I can't tell if that's on his... Might be his calf. The Boston Bee. But anyway, so he's absolutely right. And Hauk is the only guy kind of worth writing home about. Pavetta's got one foot out the door because the Red Sox aren't going to pay him the $40 to $60 million he's going to command over 3 or 4 years. You're still hoping Bayo figures it out this season, and I think he will. This series against Toronto could be a good starting point for that. But I want to point something out here. John Henry has long had a phobia about signing pitchers over the age of 30 to long-term deals. And the Red Sox have gotten burnt on several of those. David Price, Chris Sale, for recent contracts. But here's the even worse news. We're not even signing the mid-level guys to 3 or 4 year deals. We're not even getting that anymore. So I don't know how we build this rotation. They might literally be waiting for all the kids to come up. You know, Perales just is about to have Tommy John. Richard Fitz isn't that far away, but it remains to be seen how impactful he'll actually be at the major league level. So I hope we're active. I hope we get another good... Well, we will have Giolito back, barring any setbacks. I keep forgetting about that. But we'll see. Absolutely right about the Red Sox rotation. And that's why I'm still somewhat apprehensive about a playoff run.
We're not there. I mean, I think it's safe to say that we're not where we want to be. We still have some work that we need to do. I hope that we can get back to where we were once before, but I mean, it's going to take some time, and it's going to take some dedication and some really like hard thinking. It's so easy to say, oh yeah, you know, on a prior episode, we were just talking about, you know, shipping Teal and whatever package you were to offer to get somebody like Garrett Crochet. Yeah. It would take Crochet, Hauk, Bayo taking a step up, Pavetta taking a step up. But again, you're trying to ask a lot from players that may not even be on the team. Like Pavetta, is he a Boston Red Sox in 2025, 26? Maybe a year. I don't know about 2026. Bayo will still be here in a couple of years. Tanner Houck will still be here in a couple of years. Cutter Crawford will probably still be here for a couple of years. But what if they don't take a step up? Then we're just plateauing with some of our starting guys. So it's still early. They're still young, and I want to believe that they'll be able to make some adjustments, hopefully in the right direction. You know, it'd be great to see one of them turn out to be like Justin Steelgood for the Chicago Cubs. That'd be awesome. You know, perfect world where all the stars align. That'd be great. Anything else you want to add, T? Cool. Why don't you hit us with the next one?
I'm going to pivot. I had another one planned, but I'm going to go with this one. It is from Joe, who has no last name on Twitter. Apparently he's a photojournalist for like a local news affiliate, possibly from the Jacksonville area. His profile doesn't exactly say, but he says Cora is manager of the year with this roster. And in order for him to do that, you do have to make the playoffs. Your pitching sustainability concerns need to be essentially wiped out. And whether that's some of these guys finally stepping up, whether it's them actually making an acquisition at the deadline, some stuff needs to happen with the starting pitching. And you definitely have a playoff competitive offense. I'm convinced with that. You've got a great bullpen that would certainly be competitive in the month of October. So it's that rotation, as the last hot taker said. So we have to get into the playoffs for Alex Cora to win Manager of the Year. I'm looking through the rest of the American League right now. The only surefire candidate right now that could beat him is Stephen Vogt with the Guardians. He's a first-year manager. They're in first place. I don't think there was a single host on our crew that picked the Guardians to win the division. They're currently 13 games above 500. So Vogt could be a candidate. I'm looking at the Royals. I forget their manager's name. Matt Quatrero. Yeah. They've slipped out of a playoff spot. I think they'll probably get back in. So we'll see. But if they do, he could certainly be a guy that gets it. But here's the hilarious thing. Alex Cora's value just goes up. It goes up. And it gives them a 500 record as far as making the postseason. So 3 out of 6 years. If they get in, it's 3 out of 6 years, which suddenly doesn't look that bad going into free agency. So his price tag is rising like crazy right now. And you know he's motivated to get this team into the postseason to drive that price up.
So I'm trying to find this specific hot take because I was going down that list and I know we had, what was the person's name?
Joe.
All right. So Joe, first and foremost, thank you for taking the time to write to us. The idea of Cora being manager of the year has not really crossed my mind. And the reason for that being is, yeah, the Red Sox are doing fine right now. I don't see it happening. I know you mentioned Vogt, and that was another thing I was quickly checking. We had a lot of Twins and a lot of Royals and no love for the Cleveland Guardians at all, which is surprising because last year and the year before that, it was almost complete sweep for the Guardians. We were all thinking it was going to be Cleveland. You do need to win. You do need to be consistent. You need to have a lot of your players performing. And some of that that's not happening is not his fault, along with injuries that are happening, not his fault. I don't think we're going to see him get manager of the year. And to your point too, the more he wins with this team, how much more money do you think he's going to get at, like, per year? And how many more years do you think he'll get in relation to what Council got? Do you think it's going to be a similar deal, or do you think it'll be an extra mil to like $1.5 million?
So I think it'll be even in terms of years. So it'll be a 5-year deal, which is massive for a manager. I've never seen another manager get that many years. It might have happened, but I've never seen it. And I think he'll get $1 million or $2 million more than Council did. Council got $8 million per over those five. So I expect Cora to get 9 or 10.
So you're going to go, all right, so 9 or 10 million. Do you think he becomes the first manager to get that 50 mil?
Oh, yeah.
I think he'll get that.
I mean, I don't, who else would at this point?
Okay. Follow up question, because this could be fun. Who ends up saying, yes, we want you to be that guy? Do you think it's going to be the Dodgers? I don't.
I
don't think so.
It doesn't. I can't see him bowing to the analytics and not having the authority that he has in Boston. You know, looking down, I think Boone is safe in New York, regardless of what happens. Just looking down. I mean,
the Yankees are doing great too. So where's he going to go?
If the Astros want to bail out of Espada after 1 year, I mean, he could go back to Houston. I want to say the Braves could be a player, but I actually spoke with some Braves beat writers a couple weeks ago to kind of take their temperature.
Okay.
Because, I mean, Brian Snicker is a great manager, and he won the World Series out of nowhere with that team in 2021. But he's got 1 year left on his deal, and I think he's closing in on another manager. It can't be Bobby Cox, but he's chasing some record, and it has to do with wins, I think.
He's been there for 9 years. I didn't think it was that many years.
Yeah, that sounds like a long time, yeah.
That's a really, really long time. Bobby Cox, I think, was the manager there for over 20.
Yeah.
It might have actually been over 30.
He's trying to catch somebody, so that's the reason they cited for him not being willing to step aside. But I think there are teams out there that will fire their manager to get Alex Cora. David Ross was very well liked in Chicago and got fired because Craig Counsell was available and willing to manage there. I'm looking at some of these teams. I mean, the Diamondbacks would probably have an outside. Well, actually, I don't know. I think they would probably keep Lovello. But
so here's the thing with Bobby Cox. Bobby Cox managed for 25 years for the Braves. He managed 29 years total, and I actually didn't know this. He was a manager for the Toronto Blue Jays. Didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
Didn't know that. So I thought he was always with the Braves, and he was the manager from 1990 all the way to 2010. So in that span, you saw him be the manager for the World Series champion Braves in 1995 when he was 54 years old. When I was a kid, and I'm thinking managers – Bobby Cox is one of the names that comes to my mind in the 90s. I'm thinking about Joe Torre, with the New York Yankees at the time, Jimmy Williams for the Boston Red Sox. There are a couple, Tony La Russa as well was also a manager. So there are a couple of them, but he was like a staple in Atlanta. Snicker, I bet you it's not total wins because it's going to take him a while to catch that. So Bobby Cox has 2,149 wins as a manager for the Atlanta Braves. So I'm actually now curious to know what statistic it was that you were talking about.
Okay.
Do you think it was total wins?
It is. And he needs to get to 325. I don't know where he's at right now. Probably 200 something. He needs 325 wins to be second to Cox in all-time Braves wins. And
who's number two right now for the Braves?
I'm not sure. What is Brian Snicker at with wins?
All right, so I'm looking at it right now. Brian Snicker has 688 wins.
No, that's
688.
Really? As a manager?
Yeah, managerial record from 2016 through 2024. And that includes two really subpar seasons before he has brought the Atlanta Braves to six straight NL East titles.
Okay.
So, I'm trying to think about it. And, again, being a kid and watching Bobby Cox in Atlanta, I thought it was always Bobby Cox. Like, he's been managing the Atlanta Braves since Atlanta became a team. That's kind of what it felt like. He'd been there so darn long. Freddy Gonzalez is there for a little bit. He has 434 total wins. He only won 21 more games than he lost. Bobby Cox won, 507 more games. Yeah, I'm maybe it's just wins in general. I don't know. I'm curious now, though. I really am curious.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm guessing. Let's see. Yeah, we could probably wrap on that.
Cool. Perfect. Well, that's going to do it for us tonight. Terry, thanks so much for joining me. Everyone have a great day. Take care.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.